dynamics of the elders' meeting. We have been saying throughout this series that Christ is the head of the church. He is the senior pastor, and the elders are his under-shepherds. And they jointly meet together to seek his guidance. Therefore, the meeting together of the under-shepherds is highly important. My purpose in this message is to raise your awareness to the significance and the dynamics of the elders' meeting. I don't believe, however, that most men understand how important the elders' meetings are. I think too many feel it's just another committee meeting, and that's unfortunate. There are at least four reasons why this meeting is so significant. Let me list those for you. Number one, the basic direction of the church is determined in those elders' meetings. Normally, the direction of the church should come from the elders. That's the way it normally works. Now remember, according to Acts 20:28, the elders have been placed in the church by the Holy Spirit of God as overseers to shepherd the church of God. Now shepherding means leading, directing, guiding. And so when the elders meet together regularly for prayer, for discussion, for guidance, they are simply doing what the Spirit of God has called them to do, to direct and to lead the church. Now, this does not mean that others do not give direction to the church or that other members in the congregation do not have wisdom from God. Absolutely not. Very often you will find guidance and you will find great wisdom from the congregation. And a good eldership should always listen to the members of its congregation. Now, number two. Christian community life is modeled for the church by the elders in their meetings. The elders' meeting is a microcosm of the whole church. They model for the entire body how we live the Christian life. How do we handle issues and problems? How do we live together? If you read Psalm 133, I believe you have this taught there. David says, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." And then he has two illustrations to show you how good and how pleasant unity is. The first illustration is the holy oil poured out upon Aaron's head. Now the head stands for those who govern, those who lead, the leading spirits of the nation. And that holy oil represents the holiness and the sacredness of unity. When there is unity on the head, well then it diffuses itself throughout the body. And the second illustration that David gives is of the dew upon Mount Hermon, and that dew diffuses itself throughout the nation, even to Mount Zion. And I believe he is teaching that when there is unity at the head, unity among the leaders, that unity diffuses itself throughout the congregation. Sermons won't do it. The Christian life must be lived out by the chief men of the congregation. They must show what it is to be a Christian. They must show the life of serving one another, sacrificial care for one another, love, unity, forbearance, servanthood. Number three, the elders' meetings sharpen and refine the overseers themselves. Let me read Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron. So one man sharpens another. Charles Bridges in his commentary writes this, "Steel whetted against a knife sharpens the edge. So the collision of different minds weds each the edge of the other. When the mind is dull and the countenance overcast, a word from a friend puts an edge upon the blunted energy and exhilarates the countenance. The commanding word in the field of battle puts a keen edge upon the iron." I have seen once good men destroyed because they had no peers to help correct them. They were corrupted by their own ego and their own fame and success. We are better men today because we have colleagues, we have peers. Our meetings together are important. Many of our bad habits and mannerisms are improved because of other men. We encourage one another. We help one another in the battle. Wisdom and ideas are developed as we talk with one another, as we disagree with one another. We're taught humility, patience, interdependence, mutuality. Our people skills are developed. Really, our time of meeting together is a time of learning and developing. So we ourselves profit from our meeting together. We are better men for the warnings we give one another, the admonitions. Finally, number four, I would say that the spiritual success and failure of the local church is largely determined in the elders' meetings. Walter Green of the Harrison Conference Services says, there is a correlation between the quality of an organization and the quality of its meetings. What do the elders talk about? Do they confront real issues, or are they avoiding issues? I've heard it said that there is no problem too big that you cannot run away from it. Are the elders disorganized? Do they waste time? Do they know how to utilize the gifts and interests of others? Do they lack vision? Do they have foresight? Do they handle their own internal problems? Are they neglecting their duties? Brothers, in a real way, those elders' meetings are the heartbeat of the church. What the elders talk about, what they do, and what they plan will affect every member in the congregation. And I believe the Lord is also concerned about those meetings. Now, since the elders' meetings are so important to the church, they need to be constantly evaluated. They need to be guarded. They need to be improved upon. So in the remainder of our time, I would like to suggest five elements essential to an effective elders' meeting. Five essential elements. Element number one, prayer. Let's turn in our Bibles to Acts chapter 6, verse 4. Acts chapter 6, verse 4. Elders need sufficient time to pray. Acts 6:4. But we will devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. Now the apostles were the first overseers of the first Christian congregation. And notice they also were a corporate body. They ruled together. Although Peter was certainly the spokesman, he was in no sense the official leader or head of the group. They were together. Christ was their head. And as a joint body, they led the first Christian congregation. So in a sense, they were the first elders. And notice when problems arose and when there were greater pressures put on them because of the growth of the church, they were becoming sidetracked with other things to do. They come back to their priorities and they say, we must devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. Christ is the pastor. He's the head. He's the overseer of the local congregation. Prayer, then, is our primary way to seek His guidance and His will for the flock. Prayer, then, is a major responsibility of the church leadership body. Let me read to you two excellent quotes by Martin Lloyd-Jones demonstrating how important prayer is. I think that the highest picture that you can ever have of a man is to look at him on his knees waiting upon God. This is the highest achievement of man. It is his noblest activity. Man is never greater than when he is there in communion and contact with God. And then another quote by Martin Lloyd-Jones. When a man is speaking to God, he is at his very acme. It is the highest activity of the human soul. And therefore, it is at the same time the ultimate test of a man's true spiritual condition. There is nothing that tells the truth about us as Christian people so much as our prayer life. Everything we do in the Christian life is easier than prayer. You know, we're just like the children of Israel. The children of Israel were in a hostile wilderness, and we're in a hostile world, a hostile wilderness. And we are dependent upon God for our food, for our direction, for help, for protection. And the chief means we have of drawing help from our God is through prayer. And so prayer is one of our chief responsibilities. You know, there's just no way I can overstate this. Our churches are involved in a horrendous spiritual battle. And we need to realize how vulnerable we are. The saints of God need your prayers. Do you see how important your prayers are to them? Regardless of how big or successful your church is, there is failure if the elders are not earnestly praying and interceding for the saints. Praying elders are watchful, alert elders. So the first element is prayer. You need sufficient time to be praying for every single saint. Now, number two, keeping your priority straight. Let's turn to Hebrews 13:17. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls. For they keep watch over your souls. The elders' primary duty is to oversee and care for the spiritual concerns of the people. Yet there are so many things that sidetrack us from our priorities. I talk to elders and they complain that much of their elders' meeting is taken up with building items. I remind them, we're shepherds of people, not construction workers. Our primary duty is taking care of the spiritual vitality and life of the household of God. And you know, the bottom line is just simply loving people, having an interest in people, sacrificing for them, caring for them, watching over them. If you have the board concept of eldership, well, you'll find that many men will want to join your eldership. Men like to get in on decision making, don't they? But if your eldership is a pastoral body, if it's a true shepherd body, you won't find too many men wanting to join. They're not going to want to take nights out to visit saints or to visit the sick or to listen to all the problems or solve difficulties. Eldership is good old-fashioned hard work. It's caring for people. And that demands a lot of personal sacrifice, sacrifice of our energy and our time. So as we see here in Hebrews 13:17 and in our Acts 6:4 passage, our primary responsibilities are the care of the Lord's people, prayer, and the ministry of the Word. Now, since people are our primary responsibility, elders need to spend time talking over the needs of the saints. They need to be informing one another about new people who are in the church, about visits they've made, phone calls, certain counseling situations. Good communication among the elders is absolutely essential for caring for the flock. The elders need to know what is going on in their flock, and they need to be communicating to one another exactly what is going on. After our time of prayer, the first thing we do in every one of our elders' meeting is to report to one another. It's an information time. Anyone we have visited that week, we let all the other elders know. Anyone we've called, anyone new to the church. I would like to add that an effective eldership will have key people in the church occasionally meet with the elders for discussion and decision making. The Sunday school superintendent, youth leaders, Bible study leaders, important committee leaders, and particularly returning missionaries, they need to have time to meet with the elders, to share their need, to share their burdens, to share what they're doing. If these men are supporting them and praying for them, they need to know what is going on. And I would add that certain situations might demand that people come in and meet with the elders. We had one man in our church who was struggling with serious sin, and he could not get victory over that sin. And so for several months, we had him come in just for 5 or 10 minutes, right at the beginning of our meeting, and we prayed with him every week for months so that God would give him victory over that sin. I believe there are couples who are having marital struggles, and they may need to visit with the elders. Now, when you have people meet with the elders, this enhances the family nature of the church and the brotherly concept of the church. So it's important that people meet with you and that you discuss things with them. Communication is absolutely essential for doing this job. And don't forget your deacons. They are there to help you in any of the areas that you need help. If you're distracted with something, you give that to the deacons. Finally, there are questions and doctrines that require the elders to search out the Word of God for counsel and for discernment. And this takes time on top of everything else you need to do. You need to discuss doctrinal and moral issues facing the church. These are our priorities, and they're clearly brought out here in Acts 6:4. We must give ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word and to the overall general spiritual care of the Lord's people. Let's keep our priorities straight. Now, number three, use good management skills. If you had a literal flock of sheep, you would find that you'd have to think in terms of management skills. You would have to be skillful in land and water management, or the sheep would starve. You would have to plan for enough water for the summer months. You would have to guard the land from overuse. You would have to be able to heal sicknesses and watch for diseases. You cannot be inattentive for long periods of time. Too many things can go wrong. A simple disease could wipe out the flock. Weather could destroy the flock if they're not protected. Elders are managers. They're stewards. They're superintendents. In fact, anyone who is in a leadership capacity has to be a manager. Now, you may not be a gifted administrator and manager, but you still are going to have to manage. If you're disorganized and undisciplined, the flock is going to suffer. I would like to recommend to you several books. Philip Keller has written several books. He was a man who was a shepherd for many years, and he wrote a book on the 23rd Psalm as a shepherd. And then he has a book on John 10, the Good Shepherd. I have read both of these books at least three times, and they're a good reminder to me that as a shepherd, I need to be a manager. I need to work hard, and I need to be concerned about that flock. Indeed, any good shepherd wants to continually improve his management skills. I want to just read a few excerpts here out of Philip Keller's book on the 23rd Psalm, sort of encourage you to get his books and to read them. Throughout the study of this psalm, continuous emphasis has been put upon the care exercised by the attentive sheepman. It has been stressed how essential to the welfare of the sheep is the rancher's diligent effort and labor. All the benefits enjoyed by a flock under skilled and loving management have been drawn in bold lines. I hope you'll read that for yourself. I want to just share one portion out of Philip Keller's book on the 23rd Psalm, where he describes what a mismanaged sheep ranch is like. When he first started out as a sheepman, the ranch next to his was in shambles. Listen to what he says and how he would change the situation. I can never meditate on this last phrase in the Psalm, Psalm 23, without welling up in my memory vivid scenes from some of the early days on my first sheep ranch. As winter, with its cold rains and chilling winds, came on, my neighbor's sickly sheep would stand huddled at the fence, their tails to the storm, facing the rich fields in which my flock flourished. Those poor, abused, neglected creatures, under the ownership of a heartless rancher, had known nothing but suffering most of the year. With them there had been gnawing hunger all summer. They were thin and sickly with disease and scab and parasites, tormented by flies and attacked by predators. Some were so weak and thin and wretched that their thin legs could scarcely bear their scanty frames. Always there seemed to lurk in their eyes the slender, faint hope that perhaps with a bit of luck they would break through the fence and crawl through some hole to free themselves. Now he explains what he would do if they were his. I had never let them in. They had never really become mine. They had not come under my ownership or control. If they had, they would not have suffered so. Even starting out under my management, they would have been given very special care. First, they would have been put on dry, limited rations. Then they would gradually have been allowed green feed until they were adjusted to the new diet and the mode of life. There's a skillful manager for you. He goes on to say, it is the sheep owner's presence, and of course a good sheep owner, a skilled one, that guarantees that there will be no lack of any sort, that there will be abundant green pastures, that there will be still clean water, that there will be new paths into fresh fields, that there will be safe summers on high tablelands, that there will be freedom from fear, that there will be antidotes for flies and disease and parasites, that there will be quietness and contentment. If you're a shepherd, if you're an elder, you're a manager, you're a superintendent. People are busy today. They don't like to waste time at boring meetings. Conversely, a good meeting can stimulate people's minds and spirits. I've left elders' meetings and been recharged for the Lord. You can be recharged for the Lord through a challenging meeting with other men. So it's important that you have a clear idea about your meeting together. Now, key to a good meeting is the role of the moderator or the chairman. The role of the moderator is highly important. A great deal of attention is focused upon the moderator. He has a great deal of influence over the course of that meeting. And so you should give considerable thought to who moderates the meetings. Again, Walter Green says, problem number one is that the person responsible for the meeting is generally not good at running it. If you have a person who cannot keep discussions on track, who cannot summarize, who cannot move from the discussion stage to the implementation stage, who cannot keep people together, well, then you're going to have a frustrated group of men. I would suggest that if one brother or two are talented at leading and organizing, they would do best to be the moderator and to lead the meeting. Also, I would urge that you, as an eldership, write a job description for that moderator, so that he is really carrying out your plans and your intentions. And then you won't be insulted if he calls you into account. You won't be threatened if he asks why you haven't done your job this week. He's just doing what you've asked him to do. I'd also suggest a prayer leader. You need to spend time in prayer. Maybe one of the elders should have and carry the prayer guide and keep frequent prayer requests up to date and follow up on prayer requests. Now, if you're the moderator, your first duty is preparation. This is the primary reason why many meetings are a waste. The leader takes too lightly the need for preparation. You need to understand that in that elders' meeting, you can accomplish a great deal of work. You can come out of there refreshed. You can come out of there feeling you've accomplished something. You need to have time limits on your discussions. Why, one discussion could take up 3 or 4 or 5 elders' meetings. You need to limit your time. Other jobs need to be done. There needs to be follow-up on previous assignments. There needs to be accountability within the eldership. That moderator has every right to call other men into account. If you have said that you'd visit someone, you should be asked in that elders' meeting, did you visit? What did the person say? If you were supposed to make some phone calls or you had certain job responsibilities, when you meet in that elders' meeting, you should be called into account. Or else it will not work. I would also add, it's important to have records. Some have called records the group memory. Now, I don't know about the men in your group, but the men in our eldership seem to have weak memories. A month or two after we've made a decision on something, we can't even remember what we decided. And we have to run back to our notes and see who was there at the meeting and what we decided and why we decided what we did. So it's important to keep notes. I would like to add that atmosphere is very important. You do not want to sit and discuss important matters in a cold, sterile atmosphere. You should be conscious of this. It's important to have things like tea or coffee and something to eat, something to make the men relax, something to make it enjoyable. Now, number 4, have a clear idea about group decision making. We need to understand how the process works. In our society, we normally think one person is better at making decisions. Others might think, well, no, it's just a matter of vote, 51% or 80% or 90%. I believe in a biblical eldership, it is best to seek in all major decisions consensus among the elders. Since the eldership seeks Christ leading through His Spirit, and since no elder has any legal or official authority over others, elders should seek unanimous consensus on all major decisions. You know, God is very interested in the process of how this works, not even so much in the end result. For example, a man could have a very dominating disposition, be a very strong person. He can just ram through the eldership his decisions and his ideas. That's not what God is interested in. He's interested in how these men work together under Him and how they depend upon Him through prayer, how they defer to one another and love one another. God is concerned about the process. A number of times I've seen a decision or a proposal that was agreed upon by the majority of elders rightly postponed because one elder disagreed. And the Spirit of God used that one man to keep the rest of the men on track. Now, I've seen the opposite also. But in time, God brought all the men together. Remember, it's His will we want, not our will. Our will is often flawed. The body of elders is required to depend on God and patiently pray for one another. Robert Girard, in his book, Brethren Hang Together, has a good description of the process of how decision-making goes on in a biblical eldership. Listen to this excellent quotation. But the New Testament does not teach that it is necessary or more desirable for the effect of God's working to place a single person in the spokesman or bell sheep role among the others, equipped by gift and call to serve the flock as shepherds. In fact, it may be more in keeping with His design to enable five men to function so totally as one and to be so beautifully complementary to each other and with such perfect diversity and equality of intensity that neither they nor the church can see any clear distinction in terms of who is leading the leaders. They are together. At one time, one seems to be leading. At still another time, the guidance, teaching, nurturing seems to be flowing from the team, acting as one man. This phenomenon seems possible from the New Testament descriptions of the life of some churches. It has the glorious potential of providing the church with a style of leadership that least obscures the headship of Christ. If you were to visit our eldership at one time, you would say, "Oh, Brother Herb Banks is undoubtedly the leader of this group. Look at how he takes the lead. Look at how his ideas are implemented." If you were to come back 6 months later, you would see another brother. And you would say, "Oh my, that brother is certainly the leader of this group. Look at the initiative he takes. Look at how the others follow." James Michener, in his book Chesapeake, describes how the Canadian geese fly in that V formation. The first bird in that V formation, he breaks the wind so it's easier for the other birds to fly. But as he tires, he moves to the outside of that V formation, and a new bird comes into the leadership role. Well, there's a sense in which that's exactly what happens in an eldership. God puts a burden on one of the elders' hearts, and that elder seems for a time to be leading the elders. Maybe there's a discipline case, and that elder has a real burden for this, and he takes the lead, and he does much of the speaking, and he is the spokesman. At another time, there may be the initiation of a new program, and that elder has a burden for this and a heart for this, and he takes the lead. Sometimes it comes from the eldership as a whole. Remember, we are all under shepherds, and we are under our chief shepherd. It's His will we desire. And so we seek a consensus among the under shepherds, always seeking His mind and His will. Now, it needs to be added that a good eldership also will seek as much as possible consensus within the body. A good eldership wants feedback from the congregation. A good eldership wants an educated congregation. And so you need to draw from the wisdom and the knowledge of the congregation. And when you are going through a major decision, you need to involve all the saints. And there should be lots of communication, and they should be given time to think about matters also. Now, in minor matters, I do not believe we need to have total consensus. Now, you might say, what's the difference between a minor matter and a major matter? Well, if the elders are men of wisdom, and that's something the Old Testament seems to indicate, then they should be men who can tell the difference between something that's major and minor. But if you cannot, just consider it a major issue and seek a consensus. But normally when it's something that is not of a major proportion, what the elders should do is seek to defer to one another, to encourage the other brother. If one brother has an idea or he would like to initiate a program, and you don't particularly go along with that, it's not your preference, well, as servant leaders, we are thinking of the interest and the concern of others. And so we want to encourage one another in their burden and what God has led them to do. We need to cooperate with one another, encourage one another. This is where the servant spirit, the humble servant spirit, comes in. And so very often in our eldership, if one brother would like to try something and maybe some others aren't in total agreement with that, we'll express our disagreement, we'll chat about it, and then we'll just say, "Well, brother, if this is something on your heart, you just go ahead with that and we'll stand behind you." We need to cooperate, we need to compromise, we need to have that mutuality in our midst. Now, this is where the qualifications for eldership come in. Here's where the practical implications are felt. The Bible says a self-willed man cannot be an elder. The Bible says a man who is disputatious or argumentative, he cannot be an elder. Rather, an elder must be gentle. That's one of the qualifications for an elder. Now, this word gentle means conciliatory. It means reasonable. It means forbearing. And if we're all reasonable, conciliatory, forbearing men, then we're going to want to love one another, and we're going to want to encourage the interests and the concerns of one another, not just our own. So the very qualifications for eldership give us a basis for working together. Now, whatever you do, you do not need to be in a hurry. It takes time to come to a good consensus. And you need to go through the process of persuasion and compromise and time. Some big issues take months. We had one issue in our church that took us 3 or 4 years. We want to initiate a whole new Sunday morning program. And in order to start that program, we needed to build a new building. And so we talked about that among ourselves for a number of years. And then we brought it to the congregation. And we gave them nearly a year to think and pray about and discuss this thing. Until finally the whole church was in agreement. And I can tell you it was well worth waiting those years. The Japanese are considered some of the greatest businessmen in the world. Well, they're famous for their group decision-making process, for coming to a consensus. And many American businessmen who are used to making decisions much quicker find it very difficult to understand them. But who can deny that they have not been successful? We are brotherhood, and we are to preach and practice loving service and humility, dependence upon our God. Thus, we need God's timing, and we need to wait, and we need to be patient with one another, and we need to be praying for one another. Now, 5. Building strong bonds between men. The eldership is a brotherhood. And if it is to work properly, there must be strong mutuality, interdependence, and love among the men. In our individualistic society, our selfish society, it's very difficult to experience cooperation among people. If there's a strong bond of love and affection among the men, they can work through any problem. I want to just leave you with 4 tips on how to build a greater bond of love and trust. 4 tips. Number 1, begin each elder's meeting with sharing and praying for one another. Elders need to know one another. They need to know the needs of one another. They need to protect and care for one another. They need to bear the burden of one another. The closer and the friendlier you are as a group of men, the better you will be able to solve problems and work through difficulties. We begin every one of our elders' meetings with a time of sharing and prayer for one another. We go around the table and each man shares his particular prayer burden. And there's something very interesting that I have observed over the years. Most of the requests have to do with family or with business. And this is where people are at all the time. We've had some of our men even weep at this time over personal struggles they were going through. This is where we wash one another's feet. We need to be praying for one another. If we spent as much time praying as we do complaining about one another, a lot more would happen. And so we need to share with one another, we need to share what's going on in our lives, and we need to be praying for one another on a consistent basis. Now, 2, increase your contact with one another as you are able. The more contact you have as men, the better. Pray with one another. Have lunches together. Call one another. Do things socially together. I heard of one church, and maybe they're overdoing it, but on Monday morning, they meet just for prayer before they all go to work. Then another morning during the week, they just study together. And then one evening a week, they have their traditional elders meeting where they do their business. Those men know one another, and they're caring and supporting one another. The more we talk with each other, the more we spark creativity. The better we become at problem solving. I feel very strongly about the frequency of elders' meetings. I believe that once a month meeting is too infrequent. If you miss a meeting, it's 2 months before you meet together again. If someone wants to come in and meet with the elders, why, that could take a month, 2 or 3 months before they get in to meet with you if you're busy. As elders, you need to spend time praying. You need to spend time talking over the needs of the saints. You have business to carry out. You have things to study and to talk about. You need to be building relationships. You need to be working as a team. You can't do that once a month. I've noticed that elderships that meet once a month are normally working as individuals. If you want to have a team spirit, you need to be frequently meeting together. And if you have people visit your eldership, then it's even more important because that can take up a lot of time. And there are issues and items that come up that you just can't wait a month for or 2 months for. Number three, keep your commitment to meet regularly with your fellow elders. If you miss the elders' meetings, it hurts the whole body of elders. They have all made an investment in time and energy. It's very frustrating when you miss meetings. I've seen elderships disintegrate because men have not been committed to regularly meeting. That's why whenever we have an elders meeting, and if one of the elders is absent, we tape that meeting so he can go over the whole meeting. Keep your commitment to meet. It's essential to continuity and to building relationships. Now, number four, and finally, do something about group education and development as elders. Do something about group education and development as elders. We need to be thinking about our education and our development, about improving our skills. We need to be passing around books. We need to be passing around tapes and ideas to one another. One of our elders for a number of years would always visit some shepherd conference, and after he would return from that conference, he'd bring tapes back with him or new ideas, and we would have a whole meeting where we would just go over everything he learned, try to get some new ideas, see if we're on the right track. We need to be concerned about our own growth, our own improvement in skills. It's very easy to fall into ruts. It's very easy to do little when we have so much to do. In conclusion, let me just say, never underestimate the significance of your elders' meetings. Your meetings should be a time of rich blessing, a time of refining character, sharpening your skills, training younger elders, seeking God, deepening in wisdom, and enjoying happy fellowship together. I believe the Spirit of God works in a very special way as men unite together, as He has called us to care for His people. And in the end, those kind of meetings will produce better care and blessing for the whole assembly. I will close with a quote by Bruce Stabbert from his book, Team Concept. This quotation summarizes everything that we've said in this message. They, the elders, are responsible for guiding the church people by making wise decisions and by careful administration. To do this, they must be humble men of prayer. They must be conscious of sound principles of management and decision making. They must not be impulsive or dictatorial, but rather cautious and concerned for the feelings of the church. This requires that the elders meet together at least weekly in order to pray together and superintend church life. Our elders meet on Monday nights from 7 to 11 or 12. These times have been some of the greatest hours in my life. To sit among Spirit-filled men who are humbly seeking Christ's direction for the church, there is every prospect that men of diverse perspectives will be able to lead together with a blessed unity if they submit themselves one to another in the fear of Christ.